This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Bookmark on the Bigger Picture. I'm Umar Paganampake Pagan, and you're listening to 50 Books in 50 Weeks.
I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee walls when an old friend I happened to see.
To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee is a book that we've all read at some point. Whether you were forced to at school or because everyone around you was shocked and dismayed at the notion that you somehow hadn't. Regardless, it was pressure that paid off. Here was a book that would stay with you for the rest of your life. It would inspire your life choices. It would make you strive to be a better human being. Narrated by Scout, the 6-year-old tomboy daughter of widowed small-town lawyer Atticus Finch, To Kill a Mockingbird is ostensibly about race prejudice in the American South.
Hey, Atticus. Yeah?
Mr. Ewell.
Captain, I'm real sorry they picked you to defend the nigger that raped Mama Yellow. I don't know why I didn't kill him myself instead of going to the sheriff. Well, it saved you and the sheriff and the taxpayers lots of trouble.
Excuse me, Mr. Ewell, I'm very busy.
Hey, Captain, somebody told me just now that they thought that you believed Tom Robinson's story again, aren't you? You know, I said you wrong, man. You dead wrong. Miss Finch ain't taking this story against Iron. Well, they was wrong, wasn't it?
I've been appointed to defend Tom Robinson. Now that he's been charged, that's what I intend to do.
You've taken his...
Excuse me, Mr.
What kind of man are you? You got children of your own.
At the core of its main plot is the trial of Tom Robinson, an African-American accused of raping a white girl. When Atticus Finch is instructed to conduct Robinson's defense, his fortune cookie declaration that you never really understand a person until you climb inside his skin becomes the rhetorical flourish to every generation that would come after. It would become a rallying cry.
And so, a quiet, humble, respectable Negro who has had the unmitigated temerity to feel sorry for a white woman has had to put his word against two white peoples. The defendant is not guilty, but somebody in this courtroom is. Now, gentlemen, in this country, our courts are the great levelers. In our courts, all men are created equal. I'm no idealist. To believe firmly in the integrity of our courts and of our jury system, that's no ideal to me. That is a living, working reality.
But for all of Atticus Finch's noble defense, Robinson is eventually convicted by an all-white jury, condemned to death, and shot dead while attempting a jailbreak. The death of this innocent man is linked to the dominant metaphor expressed in the novel's title. For Harper Lee, it is the quintessence of innocence and the goodness of the natural world. Mockingbirds don't do one thing but sing their hearts out for us. That's why it's a sin to kill a mockingbird.
When he was nearly 13, my brother Jim got his arm badly broken at the elbow. When it healed, and Jim's fears of never being able to play football were assuaged, he was seldom self-conscious about his injury. His left arm was somewhat shorter than his right. When he stood or walked, the back of his hand was at right angles to his body, his thumb parallel to his thigh. He couldn't have cared less, so long as he could pass and punt. When enough years had gone by to enable us to look back on them, we sometimes discussed the events leading to his accident. I maintain that the Ewells started it all, but Jim, who was 4 years my senior, said it started long before that. He said it began the summer Dill came to us, when Dill first gave us the idea of making Boo Radley come out. I said if he wanted to take a broad view of the thing, It really began with Andrew Jackson. If General Jackson hadn't run the creeks up the creek, Simon Finch would never have paddled up the Alabama. And where would we be if he hadn't? We were far too old to settle an argument with a fistfight, so we consulted Atticus. Our father said we were both right. Being Southerners, it was a source of shame to some members of the
It would be years before I would realize that Harper Lee wasn't a man, that she was instead a tallish Southern white woman with a short haircut. She had been born Nellie Harper Lee. She dropped the Nellie for publication, fearing Yankees would bungle the name. She was born in Monroeville, Alabama, in 1926, when the population of the town numbered about 1,300 people. A fellow citizen of her town was a boy 1.5 years her senior named Truman Streckfus Persons. He would become her lifelong friend and would publish his books under the name Truman Capote. Nellie's mother was a homemaker and her father, a state legislator and country lawyer who once defended two black men accused of murdering a white storekeeper. Like Atticus Finch, the hero of To Kill a Mockingbird, Amasa Coleman Lee proved unable to protect either his clients' good names or their lives.
When my father was admitted to the bar, he returned to Macomb and began his practice. Macomb, some 20 miles east of Finch's Landing, was the county seat of Macomb County. Atticus's office in the courthouse contained little more than a hat rack, a spittoon, a checkerboard, and an unsullied coat of Alabama. His first two clients were the last two persons hanged in the Macomb County jail. Atticus had urged them to accept the state's generosity in allowing them to plead guilty to second-degree murder and escape with their lives, but they were Haverfords, in Macomb County, a name synonymous with jackass. The Haverfords had dispatched Macomb's leading blacksmith in a misunderstanding arising from the alleged wrongful detention of a mayor, were imprudent enough to do it in the presence of three witnesses, and insisted that the son of a bitch had it coming to him was a good enough defense for anybody. They persisted in pleading not guilty to first-degree murder, so there was nothing much Atticus could do for his clients except be present at their departure, an occasion that was probably the beginning of my father's profound distaste for the practice of criminal law. During his first 5 years in Macomb,
To Kill a Mockingbird was published in the year JFK went to the White House. It caught the mood of the civil rights movement, sold tens of millions of copies, and inspired a movie classic starring Gregory Peck. But like so many modern classics, To Kill a Mockingbird was released to mixed reviews. Some early readers sniffed at the book disparagingly, calling it a children's novel, while others mocked Atticus Finch's relentless goodness in homespun homilies. Years later, reviewers would even go on to lament that Mockingbird lacked the social enlightenment and moral bravery of true civil rights activism. But that was never the point. Here was a simple story that is remarkably well told. Here is a complex and subtle work of literature that has inspired and influenced generations of schoolchildren all over the world. To Kill a Mockingbird would win the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 1961 and rode the bestseller list for over 80 weeks. It has been translated into more than 40 languages, selling over 40 million copies. It would become one of the best-selling novels of the 20th century. Today, it sells 1 million copies a year. Atticus Finch would be named the American Film Institute's premier movie hero of this century and would inspire generations of idealistic young people to flood into law schools and become public interest advocates.
You nigger lover.
Mockingbird would pop up at or near the top of every English language great books list composed from the year of its publication on. Occasionally, it would even beat out the Bible for the number one spot.
No need to be afraid of him, son. He's all bluff.
For over 50 years, Harper Lee would be a one-book wonder. That changed today, Tuesday, the 14th of July, 2015, with the publication of her long-lost work, Go Set a Watchman.
There's a lot of ugly things in this world, son. I wish I could keep them all away from you. That's never possible.
Coming up after this, I review Harper Lee's Ghost Setter Watchmen, exclusively on 50 Books in 50 Weeks, brought to you in collaboration with the good folks at Borders, where you can now get 25% off on both To Kill a Mockingbird and Ghost Setter Watchmen. This is Bookmark on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Bookmark on the Bigger Picture, and this is 50 Books in 50 Weeks, brought to you in collaboration with Borders.
Since Atlanta, she had looked out the dining car window with a delight almost physical. Over her breakfast coffee, she watched the last of Georgia's hills recede and the red earth appear. And with it, 10 roofed houses set in the middle of swept yards. And in the yards, the inevitable verbena grew, surrounded by whitewashed tires. She grinned when she saw her first TV antenna atop an unpainted Negro house. As they multiplied, her joy rose. Jean Louise Finch always made this journey by air, but she decided to go by train from New York to Macomb Junction on her fifth annual trip home. For one thing, she had the life scared out of her the last time she was on a plane. The pilot elected to fly through a tornado. For another thing, flying home meant her father rising at 3 a.m, driving 100 miles to meet her in Mobile, and doing a full day's work afterwards. He was 72 now, and this was no longer fair.
And just like that, you're back in Macomb, the tired old town where grass grew on the sidewalks and the courthouse sagged in the square, where men's stiff collars melted by 9 and ladies bathed before noon, where everyone's business was everyone else's.
Macomb was an old town. But it was a tired old town when I first knew it. In rainy weather, the streets turned to red slop. Grass grew on the sidewalks. The courthouse sagged in the square. Somehow, it was hotter then. A black dog suffered on a summer's day. Bony mules hitched to Hoover carts flicked flies in the sweltering shade of the live oaks on the square. Men's stiff collars wilted by 9 a.m. Ladies bathed before noon. After their 3 o'clock naps, and by nightfall, were like soft tea cakes with frostings of sweat and sweet talcum.
It is a sudden and vivid flashback, an involuntary memory, triggered by a familiar voice, by that same miraculous prose. A little unpolished, slightly less song-like, but miraculous all the same. This is still Scout's story, only she's Jean Louise now, all grown up and living in the big city, 26 years old, and precisely what you would expect. Independent, opinionated, fiercely passionate, moral, colorblind, naive, idealistic. Jem is dead, struck down by the same weak heart that killed their mother. Calpurnia is distant and long ruined by age, and Atticus, well, Atticus is not the man we thought we knew, at least not this version of him. Ghost Setter Watchmen tells an old story. The one about the prodigal daughter returning home to Alabama after living in sin in New York City, only to realize that nothing is as it seems or as she remembered. It is the story of the seemingly world-wise Jean Louise and her struggle to cope with life and love in her beloved South. The novel turns on a startling realization. In and among a pile of her father's books, Jean Louise discovers a pamphlet called Black Plague. On its cover, a drawing of an Anthropophagus Negro, its author, someone with several academic degrees after his name. Inside the pamphlet was the kind of disguised racist drivel that was, for generations, used as some kind of academic justification for segregation and apartheid. Negroes, bless their hearts, couldn't help being inferior to the white race because their skulls are thicker and their brain pan shallower. The novel turns when Jean Louise suddenly realizes that both her father, the godlike Atticus Finch, and her longtime boyfriend Hank Clinton are unapologetically racist. It is a revelation that leaves Jean Louise disgusted. Do you want them in our world? Atticus asks her. Do you want your children going to a school that's been dragged down to accommodate Negro children? It is a conversation that completely breaks the rest of us. It is a shocking revelation to our young, impressionable protagonist, but even more so to all of us who have, for so long, worshipped at the altar of Atticus Finch. Our view of the South forever influenced by his humanism, by his unflinching decency, by his fidelity to the truth. Our idea of manhood rendered unattainable by Gregory Peck. Miss Jean Louise, Miss Jean Louise, stand up, your father's passing.
Miss Jean Louise, stand up. Father's passed.
And we stood up, all of us, when Atticus Finch was passing. Go Set a Watchman was Harper Lee's first novel. Previously unpublished, it is essentially an early version of To Kill a Mockingbird, one that her editor asked her to rework and rewrite. Lee would spend the next 2 years on the story, expanding on a series of flashbacks utilized in her original manuscript before finally delivering the classic we so adore. Watchman, published now as a follow-up to Mockingbird, is anything but. This is not a sequel. It is, in every way, a first draft. Reading this, we are allowed to bear witness to Harper Lee's process. We are given a front-row seat to her evolution as an author. If anything, Watchmen provides a kind of contextualization to Mockingbird. It is a pleasurable insight into just how much of Harper Lee is in her work. It fulfills a deep and abiding curiosity. In many ways, Go Set a Watchman is a far more considered piece of work, a treatise on the American South that feels authentic. Her character is being rooted in fact rather than fantasy. To Kill a Mockingbird was a fairy tale for the 1960s, a remarkable piece of work that forced us to look at the world through the eyes of a child, without doubt or disbelief, with a sense of hope and wonder. It was wish fulfillment. That Jim Crow didn't speak for everyone on that side of the Mason-Dixon line, and that there was a hero, an everyday product of the American South who was somehow transcendent. This new version of Atticus Finch still possesses many of those same virtues. He still rings true. Because at his core, he is still very much the same man. Fair, honest, even-minded, steadfast in his application of the law. He recognizes that he is, for better or for worse, a product of his time, but is nevertheless willing to change. He tells Jean Louise, "So far, in my experience, white is white and black's black. So far, I've not yet heard an argument that has convinced me otherwise. I'm 72 years old, but I'm still open to suggestion." It is ironic, but Go Set a Watchman feels like a far more timely novel than To Kill a Mockingbird. It feels apt for 2015. In this 21st century, as we still grapple with those same demons, as we struggle to give the lesser angels of our conscience a greater voice, all we can really hope for is a willingness to be open to suggestion.
Atticus, I'm not going back to school anymore.
Ah, Scout, it's just the first day.
I don't care. Everything went wrong. Teacher got mad as a devil at me and said you were teaching me to read all wrong and to stop it. Then acted like a fool and tried to give Walter Cunningham a quarter when everybody knows Cunninghams won't take nothing from nobody. Any fool could have told her that.
Well, maybe she's just nervous after all. It's her first day, too, teaching school and being new here.
Oh, Atticus.
Now, wait a minute. You just learn a single trick, Scout. You get along a lot better with all kinds of folks. You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view.
Sir?
Till you climb inside of his skin, walk around in it.
But if I keep going to school, we can't ever read anymore.
Scout, you know what a compromise is?
Bending the law?
No. It's an agreement reached by mutual consent. Now, here's the way it works. You concede the necessity of going to school. We'll keep right on reading the same every night.
just as we always have. Is that a bargain?
You're listening to 50 Books in 50 Weeks. This episode is brought to you in collaboration with Borders. Head over to their stores and you'll get a 25% discount on both To Kill a Mockingbird and Ghost Setter Watchmen. The first 50 people to buy Ghost Setter Watchmen at Borders The Curve will also get a free Harper Lee tote bag, postcard, and bookmark. This is Bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.